Listening to WCOMLP in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is your 100 watt wonder, communityradio.coop, 103.5 on your FM dial. And I'm your host for Touchstones. And we are continuing today with a discussion and reading from the Bhagavad Gita. Currently, in the background, you are hearing the Sarod, which is a CD, Ocean of Sound, Volume 1 by Krishna, in its fullness of some of all the great Hindu ideals. And it embraces not only the classic orientation, but also it deals with the things. So to start with, the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is dumbfounded. He's lined up, about to go into battle, and he doesn't want to fight because he's fighting his relatives, his cousins, and he knows that fundamentally war is evil and a terror, and he doesn't want to do it. And so Krishna, who is his charioteer, and who was also known as the current incarnation of Vishnu, which is the incarnation of God for his time, is there as his charioteer. And in order to encourage Arjuna to go through and to live through his dharma, which means his duty as a warrior and as a prince, and to continue to fighting no matter how dismal and horrible the situation would become. It was a terrible battle that was about to occur. It's the principal battle in the Mahabharata. Arjuna sat there, overwhelmed with pity and desperate tears streaming from his eyes. Krishna spoke these words to him. "Why this timidity, Arjuna, at a time of crisis? It is unworthy of a noble mind. It is shameful and does not lead to heaven. This cowardice is beneath you. Arjuna, do not give it up. Shake off your weakness. Stand up now like a man." And Arjuna said, "When the battle begins, how can I shoot arrows through Bhishma and Drona, who are my relatives, who deserve my reverence? It would be better to spend the rest of my life as a pauper, begging for food, than to kill these honored teachers. If I killed them all my worldly pleasures would be smeared with blood, and we do not know which is worse, winning this battle or losing it. Since if we killed Dhritarashtra's men, we will not wish to remain alive. I'm weighed down by pity, Krishna. My mind is utterly confused. Tell me where my duty lies, my dharma lies, where the path I should take. I am your pupil. I beg you for instruction, for I cannot imagine how any victory, even if I were to gain the kingship of the whole earth, and of all the gods in heavens, could drive away this grief that is withering my senses." Having spoken thus to Krishna, Arjuna said, "I will not fight," and fell silent. As Arjuna sat there, downcast between the two armies, Krishna smiled at him, then spoke these words. The Blessed Lord said, "Although you mean well, Arjuna, your sorrow is sheer delusion. Wise men do not grieve for the dead or for the living. Never was there a time when I did not exist." And now what's happening is Krishna is revealing himself in his cosmological sense. And in some ways, you could say that the Bhagavad Gita is revealed in a timeless encapsulation, what probably only took a few minutes, but as we can tell, would probably took several hours in narrative time. And though it's mentioned as words, you are also seeing something which is profoundly this. And so what we're having now is a theophany, which is a manifestation of the God. So Krishna said, "Although you mean well, Arjuna, your sorrow is sheer delusion. Wise men do not grieve for the dead or for the living. Never was there a time when I did not exist, or you, or these kings, nor will there come a time when we cease to be. Just as in this body the self passes through childhood, youth, and old age, so after death it passes to another body. Physical sensations, cold and heat, pleasure and pain are transient. They come and they go, and so bear them patiently, Arjuna. Only the man who is unmoved by any sensations, the wise man, indifferent to pleasure and to pain, is fit for becoming deathless. Non-being can never be. Being can never not be. Both these statements are obvious to those who have seen the truth. The presence that pervades the universe is imperishable, unchanging, beyond both is and is not. How could it ever vanish? These bodies come to an end, but the vast embodied self is ageless, fathomless, eternal. Therefore, you must fight, Arjuna. You must think that this self can kill, or think that it can be killed. You do not well understand reality's subtle waves. So if you think this self can kill, or think that it can be killed, you do not understand reality's subtle ways. It never was born. Coming to be, it will never not be. Birthless, primordial, it does not die when the body dies. Knowing that it is eternal, unborn, beyond destruction, how could you ever kill? And whom could you kill, Arjuna? Just as you throw out used clothes and put on other clothes, new ones, the self discards its used bodies and puts on others that are new. The sharpest sword will not pierce it. The hottest flame will not singe it. Water will not make it moist, and wind will not cause it to wither. It cannot be pierced or singed, moistened or withered. It is vast, perfect, in all-pervading, calm, immovable, timeless. It is called the inconceivable, the unmanifest, the unchanging. If you understand it in this way, you have no reason for your sorrow. Even if you think that the self is perpetually born and perpetually dies, even then, Arjuna, you have no reason for your sorrow. Death is certain for the born, for the dead. Rebirth is certain. Since both cannot be avoided, you have no reason for your sorrow. Before birth, beings are unmanifest. Between birth and death, manifest. At death, unmanifest again. What cause for grief in all this? Some perceive it directly, in all its awesomeness. Others speak of it with wonder. Others hear of it and never know it. The self which dwells in the body is inviolable forever. Therefore, you have no cause to grieve for any being, Arjuna. Know that your duty is, and do it without hesitation. For a warrior, there is nothing better than to battle that duty enjoins. Blessed are the warriors who are given the chances of a battle like this, which calls them to do what is right and open the gates of heaven. But if you refuse to call to a righteous war and shrink from what duty and honor dictate, you will bring down ruin on your own head. Decent men, for all time, will you take your disgrace, and disgrace for a man of honor is a fate far worse than death. I'm going to stop there for a while because I want to explain something, which is the initial truth that he discusses here, in which the philosophers have a fancy word, which is called acosm. In other words, in terms of the one's true truth that is within oneself, the core foundation of your truth is beyond the becoming of birth and death and the seeming of all life, which has no pure or no true reality and is at best a dream and is actually even a less than a whiff of smoke. It is a nothing, a true and profound ever fine nothingness. And Krishna basically tells Arjuna that to follow his duty is perfectly okay because that is the way of the world. That because ultimately it doesn't matter. It matters only in appearance, but not in truth. And so I will continue a little ways down the front. Driven by desire for pleasure and power, caught up in ritual, they strive to gain heaven, but rebirth is the only result of their striving. They are lured by their own desires, besotted by the scripture's words. Their minds have not been made clear by the practice of meditation. The scriptures dwell in duality, but beyond all opposites, Arjuna, anchored in the real and the free from all thoughts of wealth and comfort. As unnecessary as a well is to a village on the banks of a river, so unnecessary are all scriptures to someone who has seen the truth. You have a right to your actions, but never to your actions' fruits. Act for the action's sake, but do not be attached to inaction. Self-possessed, resolute, act without any thought of results, open to success or failure. This is the equanimity of yoga. Action is far inferior to the yoga of insight, Arjuna. Pity are those who, acting, are attached to their actions' fruits. The wise man lets go of all results, whether good or bad. It is focused on the action alone. Yoga is skill in actions. The wise man whose insight is firm, relinquishing the fruits of action, is freed from the bondage of rebirth and attains the place beyond sorrow. When your understanding has passed beyond the thicket of delusions, there is nothing you need to learn from even the most sacred scripture. Indifferent to scriptures, your mind stands by itself, unmoving, absorbed in deep meditation. This is the essence of yoga. Arjuna said, "How would you describe the man whose wisdom is steadfast, Krishna? How does the wise man speak? How does he sit, stand, and walk?" And Krishna says, "When a man gives up all desires and emerges from the mind and rests contented in the self by the self, he is called a man of firm wisdom. He whose mind is untroubled by any misfortune, whose craving for pleasures has disappeared, who is free from greed, fear, anger, who is unattached to all things, who neither grieves nor rejoices, if good or if bad things happen, that man is a man of firm wisdom. Having drawn back all his senses from the objects of sense as a tortoise draws back from its shell, that man is a man of firm wisdom. Sense objects fade for the abstinent, and yet the craving for them continues, and even the craving vanishes for someone who has seen the truth. At first, although, he continually tries to subdue them with a turbulent senses tear at his mind and violently carry it away. Restraining the senses, disciplined, he should focus his whole mind on me, on Krishna, and on the senses are in his control. That man is the man of firm wisdom. If a man keeps dwelling on sense objects, attachments to them arise. And from attachment, desires flare up, and from desire, anger is born. From anger, confusion follows, from confusion, weakness of memory, and weak memory, weak understanding, ruin. But the man who is self-controlled, who meets the objects of the senses with neither craving nor aversion, will attain serenity at last. In serenity, all his sorrows disappear at once, forever. When his heart has become serene, his understanding is steadfast. The undisciplined have no wisdom, no one-pointed concentration, and with no concentration, no peace. And with no peace, how can there be joy be? And with the mind constantly runs after the wandering senses, it drives away wisdom like the wind, blowing a ship off course. And so, Argajuna, when someone is able to draw his senses from every object of sensation, that man is a man of firm wisdom. And in the night of all beings, the wise man sees only the radiance of the self. But the sense world where all beings wake for him is a dark as night. The man whose desires enter the rivers flows into the sea, yet filled always unmoving, that man's finds perfect peace. Abandoning all desires, acting without craving, free from all thoughts of I and mine, that man finds utter peace. This is the divine state, Arjuna. Absorb it everywhere, always. Even as the movement of death, he vanishes into God's bliss. That was from chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. We are reading selections from Stephen Mitchell's translation. Stephen Mitchell is a poet who has written well and translated widely in the mystical literatures of the world and has a easy, steady hand with the language. Argajuna says, this is from the Yoga of Action, Chapter 3. Argajuna says, if you think that understanding is superior to action, Krishna, why do you keep on urging me to engage in this savage act, that's to kill his relatives? And with words that seem inconsistent, your teaching has bewildered my mind. Tell me, what must I do to arrive at the highest good? And Krishna said, in this world there are two main paths. The yoga of understanding for contemplative men and women, and for men who are active, the yoga of action. Not by avoiding actions does a man gain freedom from action, and not by renunciation alone can he reach the goal. No one, not even for an instant, can exist without acting. All beings are compelled, however unwilling, by three strands of nature called the gunas. He who controls his action but lets his mind dwell on sense objects is deluding himself and spoiling his search for the deepest truth. The superior man is he whose mind can control his senses. With no attachment to results, he engages in the yoga of action. Do any actions you must do, since action is better than inaction. Even the existence of your body depends on necessary actions. The whole world becomes a slave to its own activity, Arjuna. If you want to be truly free, perform all actions as worship. The Lord of creatures formed worship together with humankind and said, "By worship you will always be fruitful, and your wishes will be fulfilled. By worship you will nourish the gods, and the gods will nourish you in turn. By nourishing one another, you assure the well-being of all. Nourished by your worship, the gods will grant whatever you desire. But he who accepts their gifts and gives nothing back is a thief. Good men are released from their sins when they eat food offered in worship, but the wicked devour their own evil when they cook for themselves alone. Beings arise from food. Food arises from rain. Rain arises from worship. Worship from ritual action. Ritual action from God. God from the deathless self. And thus the all-present God requires the worship of men. He who fails to keep turning the wheel thus set in motion has damaged the working of the world and has wasted his life, Arjuna. But the man who delights in the self and feels pure contentment and feels perfect peace in the self, for him there is no need to act. He has nothing to achieve by action, nothing to gain by inaction, nor does he depend on any person outside of himself. Without concern for results, perform the necessary action, surrendering all attachments, accomplish life's highest good. Only by selfless action did Jataka and the other wise kings govern, and thus assure the well-being of the whole world. Whatever a great man does, ordinary people will do. Whatever standard he sets, everyone else will follow. In all the three worlds, Arjuna, there is nothing I need to do, nothing I must attain, and yet I engage in action. For if I were to refrain from my tireless, continual action, humankind would follow my example and also not act, Arjuna. If I stopped acting, these worlds would plunge into ruin. Chaos would be overpowered. All beings, mankind, would be destroyed. Though the unwise cling to their actions, watching for results, the wise are free of attachment and act for the well-being of the whole world. The wise man does not settle the minds of the ignorant. Quietly acting in the spirit of yoga, it inspires them to do the same. Actions are really performed by the working of the three gunas. But a man deluded by the eye sense imagines, "I am the doer." The wise man knows that when objects act on the senses, it is merely the gunas acting on the senses, and thus he is attached. Deluded by the gunas, men grow attached to the gunas' actions, and the insightful should not disturb the mind of these foolish men. Performing all actions for my sake, desireless, absorbed in the self, indifferent to eye and mind, let go of your grief and fight. Men who constantly practice this teaching of mine, Arjuna, who trust it with all their hearts, are freed from the bondage of actions. But those who are mistrustful and half-hearted fail to practice my teaching, wander in darkness, lost, stupefied by delusion. Even the wise man acts in accordance with his inner nature. All beings follow their nature. What good can repression do? Craving and aversion arise when the senses encounter sense objects. Do not fall prey to these two brigands blocking your path. It is better to do your own duty badly than to perfectly do another's. You are safe from harm when you do what you should be doing. And Argajuna said, "What is it that drives a man to evil action, Krishna, even against his will, as if some force made him do it?" That force is desire. It is anger arising from the guna called rajas, passion. Deadly and all-devouring, it is the enemy here. As a fire is obscured by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, as a fetus is wrapped in its membrane, so wisdom is obscured by desire. Wisdom is destroyed, Arjuna, by the constant enemy of the wise, which, flaring up as desire, blazes with insatiable flames. Desire dwells in the senses, in the mind, and the understanding of all these. It obscures wisdom and perplexes the embodied self. Therefore, you first must control your senses, Arjuna, and then destroy these evil that prevents you from ever knowing the truth. Men say that the senses are strong, but the mind is stronger, that the senses of understanding are stronger, the mind is the strongest as the self. Knowing the self, sustaining the self by the self, Arjuna, kill the difficult to conquer enemy called desire. That was the chapter 3 of the Yoga of Action. And now we are going to the Yoga of Wisdom. And the Blessed Lord continued, "I taught this imperishable doctrine to Vivasvat, God of the Sun, more than 100 billion years ago. Vivasvat told it to Manu, father of humans, and Manu to the king Ishkavaku, who transmitted it from one generation to the next. It was known for aeons. To all the primordial wise men, the seers and philosopher kings, but over the dwindling ages, the doctrine has been lost, Argajuna. And this is an ancient doctrine that I have taught you today, since you are my devotee and friend, and this is the innermost doctrine." And Argajuna asks, "But you were born countless aeons later than the God of the Sun. How then is it possible that you taught this doctrine to him?" And the Blessed Lord said, "Many times I have been born, and many times you have also. But these lives I remember, you recall only this one. Although I am unborn, deathless, the infinite Lord of all beings, through my own wondrous power I come into finite form. Whenever righteous falters, chaos threatens to prevail, I take on a human body and manifest myself on earth. In order to protect the good, the destiny, and the doers of evil, to ensure the triumph of righteousness in every age, I am born. Whoever knows profoundly to my divine presence on earth, it is not reborn when he leaves the body, but comes to me. Released from greed, fear, anger, absorbed in me, and made pure by the practice of wisdom, many have attained my own state of being. However men try to reach me, I return their love with my love. Whatever path they may travel, it leads to me in the end. Wishing success in their actions, men sacrifice to the gods. For ritual can bring success quickly in the world of men. I founded the 4-caste system, with the gunas appropriate to each. Although I did this, know that I am the eternal non-doer. Actions cannot defile me, since I am indifferent to results. All those who understand this will not be bound by their actions. This is how actions were done by the ancient seekers of freedom. Follow their example. Act, surrendering the fruits of action. What are action and inaction? This matter confuses even wise men, so I will teach you and free you from any harm. You must realize what action is, what wrong and action and inaction are as well. The true nature of action is profound and difficult to fathom. He who can see in action, in the midst of action, and action in the midst of inaction, is wise and can act in the spirit of yoga. With no desire for success, no anxiety about failure, indifferent to results, he burns up his actions in the fire of wisdom. Surrendering all thoughts of outcome, unperturbed, self-reliant, he does nothing at all, even when fully engaged in actions. There is nothing that he expects, nothing that he fears. Serene, free from possessions, untainted, acting with the body alone. Content in whatever happens, unattached to pleasure or pain, success or failure, he acts and is never bound by his action. When a man has let go of attachments, when his mind is rooted in wisdom, everything he does is worship and his actions all melt away. God is the offering. God is the offered. Poured out by God, God is attained by all those who see God in every action. Some men of yoga pray to the gods and make this their worship. Some offer worship by worship itself to the fire of God. Others offer their senses in the fire of self-abnegation. Others offer the senses objects in the fire of the senses. Others offer all actions to the senses and of the breath in the fire, kindled by wisdom of the yoga of self-restraint. Some offer wealth, austerities, their practice of yoga. Other ascetics offer their studies of the scripture and wisdom itself. Others, intent on control of their vital forces, offer their in-breath into their out-breath, and their out-breath into their in-breath. Others, while fasting, offer this in-breath into their in-breath. And all these understand worship by worship. They are cleansed of sin, partaking of the essence of worship. Forever they are freed of themselves, but non-worshippers cannot be happy in this world or in any other. Thus, many forms of worship may lead to freedom, Arjuna. All these are born of actions, and when you know this, you will be free. Better than any ritual is the worship achieved through wisdom. Wisdom is the final goal of every action, Arjuna. Find a wise teacher, honor him, and ask him your questions. Serve him someone who has seen the truth and who will guide you on the path to wisdom. When you realize it, you will never fall back into delusion. Knowing it, you will see all beings in yourself and yourself in me. Even if you were the most evil of evildoers, Arjuna, wisdom is the boat that would carry you across the sea of all sin. Just as firewood is turned to ashes in the flames of a fire, all actions are turned to ashes and wisdom's refining flames. Nothing in the world can purify as powerfully as wisdom. Practiced in yoga, you will find this wisdom within yourself. Resolute, restraining his senses, the man of faith becomes wise. Once he attains true wisdom, he soon attains perfect freedom and perfect peace. Ignorant men without faith are easily mired in doubt. They are never to be truly happy in this world or in the world beyond. A man is not bound by action, who renounces action through yoga, who concentrates on the self, and whose doubt is cut off by wisdom. Therefore, with the sword of wisdom, cut off this doubt in your heart, follow the path of the selfless action, and stand up, Arjuna. As you may have noted, that was chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita on the yoga of wisdom. As you may notice, there's a diminution. We started with the greatest of visions of things in which the only thing that exists is the self and all of its sublimity. And in truth, nothing else exists, and everything else is a dream and illusion. And now we are slowly devolving into a understanding of how in the dream and the illusion, how to live in it in a way that realizes the self that is beyond action and inaction. Chapter 5, The Yoga of Renunciation. Arjuna says, Krishna, you have praised both renunciation and the yoga of action. Tell me now of these two, which is the better path? And Krishna says, renunciation and yoga both lead to the ultimate good. But of the two paths, Arjuna, yoga is the more direct. The true renunciate neither desires things nor avoids them. Indifferent to pleasure and pain, he is easily freed from all bondage. Fools say that knowledge and yoga are separate, but the wise do not. When you practice one of them deeply, you gain the rewards of both. The state reached by true knowledge is reached by yoga as well. Both paths lead to the self. Both lead to selfless action. It is hard to renounce all action without engaging in action. The sage, wholehearted in his yoga of action, soon attains freedom. Wholehearted, purified, mastering body and mind, his self becomes the self of all beings. He is unstained by anything he does. The man who has seen the truth thinks, I am not the doer at all times. When he sees and hears, touches, when he smells, eats, walks, sleeps, breathes, when he defecates, talks, and takes hold of, when he opens his eyes or shuts them, at all times he thinks, this is merely sense objects acting on the senses, offering his actions to God. He is free of all action. Sin rolls off him as drops of water roll off a lotus leaf. Surrendering attachment, the sage performs all actions with his body, his mind, and his understanding, only to make himself pure. The resolute in yoga, surrender results, gain perfect peace. The irresolute, attached to results, are bound by everything they do. Calmly, I renounce all actions. The embodied self dwells at ease as the lord of the nine-gated city, not acting, not causing action. It does not create the means of action or the action itself or the union of result and action. All of these arise from nature. nor does it partake of anyone's virtuous or evil actions. When knowledge of the self is obscured by ignorance, men act badly. But when ignorance is completely destroyed, the light of wisdom shines like the midday sun and illumines what is supreme. Contemplating that, inspired and rooted and absorbed in that, men reach the state of true freedom from which there is no rebirth. Wise men regard all beings as equal. A learned priest, a cow, an elephant, a rat, and a filthy rat-eating outcast. Freed from the endless cycle of birth and death, they can act impartially toward all beings, since to them all beings are the same. They do not rejoice in good fortune. They do not lament in bad fortune. Lucid with minds unshaken, they remain within what is real. A man unattached in sensations who finds fulfillment in the self, whose mind has become pure freedom, attains an imperishable joy. Pleasures from external objects are wombs of suffering, Arjuna. They have their beginnings and their ends. No wise man seeks joy among them. The man of yoga who is able to overcome here on earth the turmoil of desire and anger, that man is truly happy. He who finds peace and joy and radiance within himself, that man becomes a one with God and vanishes into God's bliss. The wise man, cleansed of his sins, who has cut off all separation, who delights in the welfare of all beings, vanishes into God's bliss. He who controls his mind and has cut off desire and anger realizes the self. He knows that God's bliss is nearer than near. Closing his eyes, his vision focused upon the eyebrows, making the in-breath and the out-breath equal as they pass through his nostrils, he controls his senses and his mind, intent upon liberation. When desire, fear, and anger have left him, that man is forever free. Knowing me as the enjoyer of all worship, the Lord of all worlds, the dearest friend of all beings, that man gains perfect peace. In chapter 6, entitled The Yoga of Meditation, Krishna continues, he who performs his duty and who, with no concern for results, is the true man of yoga, not he who refrains from action. Know that right action itself is renunciation, Arjuna. In the yoga of action, you first renounce your own selfish will. For the man who wishes to mature, the yoga of action is the path. For the man already mature, serenity is the path. When a man has become unattached to sense objects and to actions, renouncing his own selfish will, then he is mature in yoga. He should lift up the self by the self and not sink into the selfish. For the self is the only friend of the self and its only foe. The self is a friend for him who masters himself by the self. But for him who is not self-mastered, the self is the cruelest foe. For a man who has mastered himself is perfectly at ease. In cold, in heat, in pleasure or pain, in honor or in disgrace. The mature man, filled with wisdom, resolute, looks with equal attachment at a lump of dirt, a rock or a piece of pure gold. He looks impartially on all, those who love him or hate him, his kinsmen, his enemies, his friends, the good and also the wicked. The man of yoga should practice concentration alone, mastering mind and body, free of possessions and desires. Sitting down, having chosen a spot that is neither too high nor too low, that is clean and covered with a grass mat and deerskin and a cloth, he should concentrate with his whole mind on a single object. If he practices in this way, his mind will soon become pure. With his torso and head held straight, with his posture steady and unmoving, gazing at the tip of his nose, not letting his eyes look elsewhere, he should sit there calm, fearless, firm in his vows to be chaste, his whole mind controlled, directed, focused, absorbed in me. Constantly mastering his mind, the man of yoga grows peaceful, attains supreme liberation, and vanishes into my bliss. For he who eats too much food or too little, who is always drowsy or restless, will never succeed in the yoga of meditation. For a man who is moderate in food and pleasure, moderate in action, and moderate in sleep and waking, yoga destroys or sorrow. With a mind grown clear and peaceful, freed from selfish desires and absorbed in the self alone, he is called the true man of yoga. A lamp sheltered from the wind, which does not flicker. To this is compared the true man of yoga, whose mind has vanished in the self. When his mind has become serene by the practice of meditation, he sees the self through the self and rests in the self, rejoicing. He knows the infinite joy that is reached by understanding beyond the senses. Steadfast, he does not fall back from the truth. Attaining the state, he knows that there is no higher attainment. He is rooted there, unshaken, even by the deepest sorrow. This is true yoga, the unblinding of the bounds of sorrow. Practice this yoga with determination and with a courageous heart, abandoning all desires born of his own selfish will. A man should learn to restrain his unruly senses with his mind. Gradually he becomes calm and controls his understanding. Focusing on the self, he should think of nothing at all. However often the restless mind may break loose and wander, he should rein it in constantly, bringing it back to the self. When his mind becomes clear and peaceful, he enters absolute joy. His passions are calmed forever, and he is utterly absorbed in God. Mastering mind and body, purified by all sin, he easily gains true freedom and finds an infinite joy. Mature yoga, impartial everywhere that he looks, and sees himself in all beings and all beings in himself. The man who sees me and everything within me will not be lost to me, nor will I be lost to him. He who is rooted in oneness realizes that I am in every being. Wherever he goes, he remains in me. When he sees all beings as equal in suffering or in joy, because they are like himself, that man has grown perfect in yoga. And Arjuna said, "You have taught that the essence of yoga is equanimity, Krishna. But since the mind is so restless, how can that be achieved? The mind is restless, unsteady, turbulent, wild, stubborn. Truly, it seems to me, as hard to master as the wind." And the Blessed Lord said, "You are right, Arjuna. The mind is restless and hard to master, but by constant practice and detachment, it can be mastered in the end. Yoga is indeed hard for those who lack self-restraint, but if you keep striving earnestly in the right way, you will reach it. And Nagarjuna said, Krishna, what happens to the man who, with faith of no self-control, wanders from the path of yoga before he becomes mature? Hasn't he lost both the here and the hereafter? Doesn't he, rootless and insubstantial, fade like a cloud in the sky? This is the doubt that troubles me, Krishna. I beg you, please help me. For only you can remove this doubt from my mind. Neither here nor hereafter, Arjuna, is that man lost. No one who does not work will come to an evil end. Reaching the heaven of the righteous are uncountable years. That man will be born again to parents who are upright and wealthy. He may even be born of parents who have practiced yoga and are wise, though a birth as fortunate as this is more difficult to obtain. There he regains the knowledge acquired in his former life, and from that point on, Arjuna, he strives toward the ultimate goal. Unconsciously, he returns to his former practice. Even a man who asks about yoga goes beyond formal religion, striving with constant effort, cleansing himself of all sin through many lifetimes, as at last he attains the ultimate goal. The man of yoga is greater than ascetics or the learned or those who perform the rituals thereof. Be a man of yoga, my son. Practice yoga sincerely with a single-minded devotion. Love me with perfect faith and bring your whole self to me. And so we have there five chapters read from the Bhagavad Gita, chapters 2 through 7. And we will be continuing to explore these themes, specifically the yoga of sound, as Krishnamurti Siddhar talks about it, and he should be our guest next week. So until then, this has been Touchstones, and I am Paul Naj, and I am your host and producer. So we will continue delving into the Bhagavad Gita next week with Sridhar. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.